Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, let's try this again. I'm going to try and be enthusiastic, okay? Ready?
Okay.
Okay. Hello and welcome to this. It is the most enthusiastic rugby podcast on the planet, the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast. We don't take ourselves or the game too seriously. I am sat in studio with my dear friend Phil. How are you, Phil?
Hello, Jonathan. I'm very well, thank you.
And down the line, sipping Negronis in a shipping container, alone. It sounds rather sad, actually. It's Tim Cocker. How are you?
Very well. And yeah, I have an announcement to make. I'm not coming back physically into the rugby dungeon until I have an upgrade on my chair. It's a protest.
Oh, I think you might be getting an upgrade on your chair soon, mate.
Yeah, an even more padded seat than the two that we're sat on.
And we're not going to say any more about it than that. I will say, though...
No, watch this space.
I will say, Phil, you look magnificent today, mate.
Thank you very much, JB. Does this colour of green and yellow, this particular shade of green and yellow, really bring out my eyes?
It does, actually. It does. And the best part about the Egg Chasers rugby top, which you're wearing now, is it brings out everybody's eyes.
Absolutely.
Everybody's eyes look nicer in Egg Chasers rugby tops.
So if you're interested in getting one, get yourself to akumashops.com/eggchasers, and you can pick from the pro fit or the retrofit jerseys.
Can I just say, I've got one single solitary proud tear rolling down my cheek the way you two have just bossed all of the nuts and bolts together. I'm like a proud dad.
Oh, thanks, Tim.
Beautifully done.
It's only taken nearly 6 years for us to do a 3-minute intro without messing it up.
And can I say, like professionals, we've actually written a running order so we don't forget to say things.
Well, can I just check then, if JB's done the setup so quickly, can I just check that we're definitely recording?
Hang on a minute. Yes, we are. I can confirm.
Well done. Good work.
So I'm not feeling great today, boys. I really am not.
Too many Negronis last night?
No. There is a so-called cocktail bar in Didsbury that doesn't sell Negronis.
What?
I was horrified. But I did go to a place called the Head of Steam in Didsbury, which is one of these places that prides itself on all the beers it has. It has loads of beers. Literally ordered two of the most disgusting beers I've ever had. Two sour Belgian beers.
Salty Kiss?
Go on.
Salty
no,
worse.
Might even be worse than Salty Kiss.
What?
Yeah. They were absolutely horrendous, followed by, like, it came in a bottle. I think it's a Timmermans beer. It was dreadful.
So the Tinnamans, they do the fruit beers, don't they?
That's exactly what they do. So the extremely sour, fruity beers.
I had a beer this weekend called Butt Cum.
Sorry? So. And how did that
butt
taste?
Frothy.
Nice.
No, it was. It was from a brewery in Stroud in Gloucestershire, local brewery near where my friend lives. And... when I saw butt cum, I thought, oh, yeah, I'll try it, just for the same reason that you did, just to try and find the most disgusting beer. But do you know where it does sell Negronis?
No, go on, tell me. The Stoop. The Stoop
Park.
in the Maserati. Where?
Yeah, Allianz Park at Michael Rhodes' gin bar.
Wow.
Nice play.
We got a picture sent to at Rugby Podcast by Tom Haslam, holding up his Negroni with the game going on at Saracens in the background, and Michael Rhodes has a gin bar, and he will occasionally be there when he's not playing, serving you Negroni.
Amazing.
So it's spreading. It's spreading. James Bamford also sent us a Negroni pre-dessert, which I wasn't sure about. Pink grapefruit Negroni with basil and ginger.
Not a Negroni.
How do you feel about that?
Not a Negroni.
Yeah.
No.
Not particularly
and,
happy
James
with
Hager,
it.
James Hager's been listening to the podcast, as has Paul Millen been listening to the podcast, as has Will Wobb been listening to the podcast. All tried their first Negroni this week, all immediately regretted their decision.
Excellent. That's exactly what I like to hear. Well, I tell you who won't be drinking Negronis this week. Newcastle Falcons, sadly.
Well,
I thought you were going to say Israel Folau.
he might be. We'll talk about him later.
They do say gin is good for grief, don't they?
Yeah, mother's ruin.
So maybe it's best to get on the Negronis.
They'll certainly feel like they've been drinking Negronis, but they won't be drinking any. Poor Newcastle, they've gone.
I know. It did, for the last few weeks, it has felt like a matter of time. Unfortunately, it happened this week.
So I looked at the Newcastle situation, I thought, right, this is basically a four-chapter book now. There are four independent events that need to happen to make sure that they stay up. One would be on Friday night, making sure that Leicester don't get a bonus point. I thought if that just comes off, they'll be fine. And then it didn't. Right in the last play, I thought that's it. They're done now. They're gone. No matter what they do tomorrow, they're gone.
Yeah, they were in an impossible position before that game, and then going against Gloucester and the way that it played out. Unfortunately, the way that it played out was Newcastle. A lot of good stuff came through Mickey Young, who they've missed for a lot of the season,
yeah,
and through Dunbar, who's obviously new to the team. But those two injected a bit of a spark into the team, and so they played some good stuff. Mm. Unfortunately, they didn't play enough good stuff, and then the Matt Banahan intercept.
Oh, just, devastating, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was really the final nail in the coffin.
What, looking back at the season, can Newcastle learn?
It's interesting because I think they'll be looking back and trying to draw comparisons to what went right last season.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of the squad's the same. They've had a few injuries that they've suffered this year. They have lost a few players in the pack. They've lost a few experienced old heads in the pack. And I think that's probably those tight games when you want the old heads to make the right decisions, not just whether to go for posts or go for the corner, but in-game decisions, whether to hit a ruck, whether to carry, whether to risk an offload, or whether to just to put your head down. They've perhaps missed some of that, so they've ended up losing some of the close games. But also, for much of the season, they just haven't been good enough. So some of their other old heads who have stayed there, someone like Flood, for example, has not given as much as he perhaps could or should have done to that team.
He has been disappointing, I've got to say.
And it's always easy. If you've got a team that are losing, it's always easy to say the 10's disappointing. But it would have been nice to see a bit more from Flood throughout the season.
What, one interesting moment in the season, which was, I'm not taking any credit for this, it was actually something that Loris Delalio highlighted, or one of the team on BT Sport on the Bath game when they were talking about the relegation. They highlighted the third game in the European Cup, where having beaten Montpellier and beaten Toulon,
yeah,
mm-hmm, Newcastle picked the scratch side to go to Edinburgh, got absolutely walloped, and they never recovered their form after that point.
Yeah. I also think that last year might have been a little bit deceiving for them. I mean, obviously, it's because they're relegated now. But I wonder if, when they were reviewing their team this off-season, if the overachievement from the season before maybe meant that they didn't address the needs which they particularly needed to.
Yeah, it probably did paper over some cracks, some very good results, narrow results going their way last season, yeah, which had gone the other way this season. But also, we've said it before, if you are a kind of generic lower mid-table team, which Newcastle have been for a number of years,
yeah,
if you somehow find yourself in the top six and the following year you're playing in the big boys competition and you are travelling to Montpellier, you're travelling to Toulon, albeit...
I'm going to call you back in a sec, boys. Hold on, sorry.
Okay.
Are you doing real work?
Sounds like it.
Carry on.
Yeah, if when you find yourself in the big boys competition, you've got to go for it in the big boys competition, which means you don't always get your... if you've not got the squad depth, your players don't get the right rest, they don't get the right balance, yeah. and you end up burning out. And we've seen it a few years ago when Sale got into the top six, and then the following season they were fighting for relegation. We have seen that kind of thing before. So
yeah, I mean, with the Champions Cup, the thing which struck me is when they played in it, they didn't even look out of place. I mean, they didn't not only not look out of place, they looked really, really good.
And as Tim just said, they beat Montpellier, they beat Toulon.
I wonder if we'll ever see a team go down again who has wins under their belts against teams like Toulon and like Montpellier. I mean, could you imagine any? Can you imagine London Welsh beating Toulon and Montpellier?
Well, it's interesting because the two times that London Welsh got up into the Premiership, they got hammered both times. But that it feels like that just couldn't happen now.
Yeah,
because you've now got now that happened because it took Bristol so long to get their act together from when they previously got relegated to where they are now. Now Bristol have got their act together. London Irish have got their act together. Newcastle, I have no doubt, Newcastle will retain a good chunk of that squad. They'll retain the right chunk of that squad. The statement said they were going to retain Dean Richards. So they're going to have the foundations so they can come straight back up, but not just come straight back up. They're going to come straight back up and be competitive. So I just can't see, unless something financially goes wrong with the club, I can't see one of those 13 teams ever having as bad a time as London Welsh did. Therefore, I actually can see that kind of problem happening again.
Yeah.
Not regularly, but maybe once every 5 years you could get someone who finishes top four or top six and then dropping out the following season.
I think you're obviously right, because as I've pointed out with Newcastle, I mean, it is heartbreaking for their fans. Imagine being the owner, by the way. I mean, you buy this club, not because it makes a profit, because it's, you know, a fairly prestigious thing to own. You think, yes, I've cracked it. Top four.
Yeah.
You know, it's only good times from now on.
No. The only way is up.
Yeah. I mean, you're going to have... I would probably at this point want to sell. Because I've been down. I've come up. We've done the things the right way. We've got a good team, a good director of rugby. And now we're relegated. And I think, do you know what? I have done everything I can. I just want to sell this thing, though.
Yeah, that won't happen. Did you read the statement they released pretty much straight after the game?
Yes, basically. Everything's going to remain the same, see you in a year.
Pretty much, yeah. Talking, as I said before, about the foundations, the strength of the team, the leadership and the management structure is going to remain in place. So I think it's... I think it's very positive position, considering the drop.
Well, any one of the teams above them, any one of them, I just look at them and think they're all too good to go down, but no one is too good to go down, though. That's how strong the league is.
And no one is too good. I know I've referenced this before, but Leicester got a lucky decision against Wasps 4 or 5 weeks ago.
Yeah, they really did.
Wasps who got an unlucky decision this week, but had Leicester not got that lucky decision and had just one game gone Newcastle's way, we would still be fighting. We would still have an uncertain position going into the final week, and a team as big and high profile with the history of Leicester really actually could have gone down. And it happened in, I think, 2004-05 when Harlequins went down, happened when Northampton Saints went down in 2007.
Both teams have subsequently won the Premiership.
Yes,
since coming back.
Yes, so it's not always bad. Now those two have more of a kind of fan base and more of a kind of historic structure behind than someone like Newcastle. But the way that the league is set up and the way that the salary cap is defined means that it is more of a... it's not a completely level playing field, but it's much more of a level playing field.
I've had an idea. It's just one of those things that I'm... in fact, I've got two ideas. Okay, so first idea is, what would you say if the rules dictate that when you come up, you could not be relegated for 3 years? I'd love to go back and see which other team would then be relegated if the team that was promoted couldn't get relegated for 3 years.
Interesting, yeah. Now, it would have caused a problem because that awful, that horrible London Welsh team would have stayed in and got 80 to 100 point beatings for three consecutive years.
Yes, that would have happened. But mind you, maybe you need 3 years to, if, as a London Welsh, because everyone, you know, the team that's coming back up is London Irish, so they're actually just an established Premiership outfit who are returning. Yeah. They'll not be Newcastle, though. I mean, there is nobody in the Championship now outside of those guys, those 13 teams, that can come back up. It's sort of ring-fenced itself in a way.
Well, it kind of have, because they are the properly professional with the academies.
Yeah.
That they've got so much kind of history and structure behind them. Now, it's interesting to see what other clubs, like Ealing, do you see the Premiership...
They won.
The Championship Cup, or whatever it's called.
Yeah, they beat London Irish.
They beat London Irish, yeah. So, they're a team who would like to... Well, I'm sure any team in that division would like to do an Exeter.
Yeah.
But they're a team who are actually funding it and building structures to potentially at one stage get to a position where they can do that. But you're right, I think certainly for the next few years, until one of those other teams takes the step up, you have got 13 teams playing in a 12-team league.
The other thought I had is that it should definitely be Leicester Tigers going down, because I think it'd actually be quite good for them. It'd be dynamite for the Championship. They would be rubbing their hands now at the thought of Leicester coming to town.
Oh, yeah, because your gate receipt... So a club like Newcastle or like Bristol or like London Irish, they will bring... So it will always be a draw if Doncaster or Richmond or whoever... If they're playing those teams, it will always be a draw.
Yeah.
It's not as much of a draw to play Newcastle as it is to play Leicester.
No, not at all.
It is a big deal.
Imagine playing for Esher or someone and going to Welford Road.
Yeah.
That'd be amazing. I bet Welford Road would still be packed. It just feels like it'd be better if Tigers went down, because they'd be better able to deal with it. The fans would probably enjoy it. They wouldn't admit it, but they'd probably enjoy it, whereas Newcastle have done this before.
And it would definitely force Leicester to look at themselves and do some proper analysis of where things are going wrong, where do they need to alter their playing structure, their management structure, their recruitment structure, and all the rest of it. But they live to fight another day and another season.
My guess is Leicester will just supplement what they already have with just layers and layers of management. If that's what I would do in their situation.
More management.
Yeah. More management, please.
Yeah, and a more opaque reporting hierarchy as well.
Excellent. Real, real flat. yet also real, real vertical too.
Yeah, yeah, because everyone reports into everyone else, but no one knows who reports to who.
I want everyone to have some responsibility with the role, but with no accountability.
Yeah.
The ideal. Now, let's just move things on to... Let's talk about the Sale game, because Tim's not here, so he can't stop us. Did you watch the Sale game?
I've seen the extended highlights today.
Now, you might think it's weird for me to bring up, when the Pro 14 have just had their playoffs and all the rest of it, this game. But I wanted to talk about it, because...
I don't think anyone is thinking that's weird.
It's pretty weird. Some of the most bizarre refereeing decisions I've ever seen in my life.
So, I've seen the disallowed try for Leua.
Yep.
Where there were some scuffles between Sheedy and Ashton.
Yeah.
Now, I think he's made the right decision, as in, I don't think it should have been a try.
I think he's got the right...
I think the right outcome happened. I think the decision he made couldn't explain the try being disallowed.
No.
Because he gave a penalty...
To Bristol,
even though Bristol had just scored. So you can't do that... I wouldn't think you should be able to do that and disallow the try.
So, a couple of things here. Number one, okay, I thought Sheedy started it.
Sheedy, from what I've seen...
It does look like Sheedy starts it, doesn't it?
So, from what I've seen, Sheedy starts it, Ashton then does some pushing, Sheedy then finishes it by pulling Ashton's jersey over his head.
Yeah. So
unless you're going to give a penalty against Sheedy, then a penalty against Ashton, then another penalty against Sheedy...
Yeah, so let's just go back to that, because I've realised if you didn't watch Bet365 to watch the Sale game, you might not have seen this game. So I'll just explain what happened. The ball gets kicked to Sale. Sale then kick the ball back. Callum Sheedy, who is the Bristol fly-off, barges into Chris Ashton, handbags it into you. Because they're scrapping on the floor, as such, it ends up with Ashton with his top over his head. The guy from Bristol, Nate, is his name, the winger?
Alapeti Leua.
Yeah, basically beats one defender, and in the space where Chris Ashton should be, he isn't there and scores. Matt Corley then goes, reviews the decision, decides that Chris Ashton started the fight, and therefore it should come back for a Bristol penalty try disallowed.
Well, he doesn't say that Ashton starts it, but he says that he gives the final penalty against Ashton.
Yeah, it's bizarre.
Which is the weird bit.
So, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt, and I'm going to say, look, he saw the video better than I did. He's an experienced referee. He is correct. Ashton started it. I don't think that, but let's just say Ashton started it, right? So, am I to get this right? Ashton started a fight with a 20-year-old fly half, which he lost, and therefore Bristol can't have a try. Is that how you summarise that?
Yes, but only because, if that was the scenario, which I don't think it is, because in that scenario, Searle reacted. So he gives a penalty away. So the latest penalty from that scuffle should be the Billy Searle penalty for pulling Ashton's jersey over his head. But that's not the way...
Yeah, so it should. So if Ashton starts it, it should be penalty reversed. If Searle starts it, it should be penalty reversed.
Yeah, and I actually think... I think the order of interaction between those two... Sorry, this is going really niche on this decision, which a lot of people won't have seen.
But it's an amazing decision. Because a try was disallowed, and a team is missing a try and the win, as it turns out.
But they get the penalty. That's the unusual bit.
Yeah. So absolutely. So Matt Corley is a very precise referee. Okay, that's his style. He's very much letter of the law. So you get those weird things like we had with that. Did you see the end of the game?
Not in any detail.
All right, so riddle me this. The time has expired, okay, when the ball crosses the dead ball line from a penalty kick. That, to me, is game over. Would you agree?
If time has expired...
Time has expired by the time the ball crosses the line, okay, crosses the dead ball line out of the field of play. So he's missed the penalty kick,
yeah,
out of the field of play.
I would say yes, but they did change the rule around kicking for touch and penalties. If the penalty was given before the clock runs dead, even if then the clock elapses, you've got time for another line out.
Yeah, so not to disadvantage the attacking team, but what we're talking about is kicking four posts.
Yeah.
Right. So Matt Corley's interpretation of this is the time had not expired when Boots struck ball, and therefore it's a 22 dropout.
Let the boys play.
Well,
free rugby.
This is what I was about to say. So, on the one hand, you've got this very peculiar thing which Bristol fans can't be happy with. I'm not happy about it, and I'm a neutral. But then you've got this really weird thing where he then allows the game to restart. They take a dropout. Sale get all the way to the Bristol 5 metre, I think. No. What happens is they get all the way into Bristol's half. Faf takes a kick because Sale win the penalty. The kick bounces off the post. Sale goes to 14. Bristol go touchline to touchline two or three times.
They coast get to coast.
Coast to coast. Get to Sale's 5 metre line. AJ McGinty magically steals the ball. Magic AJ. Runs to halfway and then thinks, enough of this. Kicks it out. Remarkable end. One of the best ends to a game I have seen in a long time. All because Matt Corley's very precise. So, you know, sometimes it's a bit weird. In fact, it's all a bit weird, but it works.
Let the boys play.
Yeah, exactly.
So, given that we've spent 5 to 10 minutes on what is effectively a dead rubber in the Premiership.
Well, it wasn't when they played it.
True, but now looking at the table.
Oh, hang on. Hi, Tim. Where's he?
Hello.
Hello.
Have you read the traffic, weather and news?
I don't know what you're talking about. I'm not doing this during my show. What are you talking about?
Obviously. Yeah, mate, perfect timing by you, because in the 20 minutes that you've been away, we've just finished the Sale game.
More importantly, we are just about to go on to Pro 14 quarterfinals. Even
you're not joking, are you? You're actually not joking.
yeah, we're not joking. Sorry, mate.
You'll have to listen back.
All right.
the Pro 14.
Pro 14. So we had two
remarkable games,
two quarterfinals.
Yeah.
So we had Munster, massive favourites, hosting JB's beloved Benetton. Massive underdogs. In absolutely,
not in my mind. I thought they were going to win this. I thought they were going to win it right until the end.
And I laughed when you predicted them to win last week. I laughed.
Have you watched them play? I mean, you have now, but
no, I've watched them play a few times this season, and they are good. I thought anyone going to Munster was going to lose.
Well, it seems like you were right. But I tell you what, of those two teams that played, I think Benetton will give a much better account of themselves against Leinster. Leinster is just basically a procession now. Who can give Leinster the trophy fastest?
Based on what I saw on Saturday afternoon, I wouldn't disagree. Yeah. I don't. Munster did not play particularly well at all. They were disrupted and held well. Benetton defended well and admirably. And Munster were kind of forced into taking long-range penalties.
Yeah, and not only that, I thought...
Let's just talk about the last decision. There's not a lot, as you say, there's not a great deal to talk about in Pro 14.
No, I thought they were brilliant. Well, they were beating Munster up, they were making yards as they pleased.
Retuva, the winger.
Yeah, he's not bad, is he?
He is class. Because his try... So he almost set up or scored another try. But his try, the passing was actually pretty poor. So he receives the ball slow behind him after three players have eaten up a load of space by drifting across. And he still manages... Two or three Munster defenders, and he still manages to finish it. That was a bit of magic. But yeah. Tim, you're probably right. The rest of the game was all leading up to Nigel's big moment.
Well, it was the wrong decision. There's no two ways about that. I mean, CJ Stanley does not win that penalty. He's not supporting his way. Yada, 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 yada. But I don't think that was the biggest moment in the game for me. I think the biggest moment in the game was sort of Treviso deserved to lose. Benetton deserved to lose in the end because instead of going for the try, they tried to set up two stupid drop goals with a player who clearly is not qualified to drop goal the ball.
Certainly not from the 45 metres out that he was.
Look what he did first time round. What do you want to do next, boys? Let's go longer. Yeah. So in my mind, like, they were brilliant, but when they went negative, and that's effectively what they did, they went very, 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 very narrow. They stopped trying to win yards, and you know, you deserve to lose. If you do that, you deserve to lose.
But it's disappointing.
Good, great.
It's disappointing to lose in that manner, though.
Yeah.
It was the wrong decision.
It is a remarkably good sign for Italian rugby, though. I think that's the more important thing.
It is. And I said this last week that so Italy will get a big benefit out of playing games like this, even losing games like this, but playing.
Yeah.
And they'll get a much bigger benefit from being competitive in games like this. If this had been a procession for Munster, then they would have gotten nothing out of the game.
Yeah.
But being competitive right up to the last minute and seeing how much it hurts to lose a game like this by such narrow margins can only be good for Italy, particularly in a World Cup year.
Tim, have you got anything to add to Benetton's mighty performance?
Nothing whatsoever.
Well, look, we've done Benetton. I think I'm done, boys. Unless
I'd quite like to mention the other quarterfinal.
Go on then.
Hold on. Can we just have you touched on the Army Navy game?
Have I touched on the Army Navy?
Which was the biggest rugby event of the weekend.
Wait. Do you mean the fact that the Air Force have won again?
In the women's competition, congratulations.
RAF women's champion, first ever win over the Army in 20 years. So, yeah, how about that?
But the RAF men got battered by the Navy, as I wear my Navy jersey tonight.
Didn't the Army men beat the Navy?
The Army, my boys, the Army.
They did.
Beat the Navy 27-11.
Yeah, the Air Force weren't playing this week. Well, they were winning the championship, but the Air Force weren't playing the men's.
But more's the point on this one. More's the point on this one. Before this game, in the build up, there was stories about extra police being drafted in. There's been more stories about the people who live out around Twickenham Stadium being unhappy and want the game moved to different venues because of the fans. Now, my experience of the Army Navy game is that, yet they drink more than any other group of rugby fans or any other group of human beings I've ever seen.
Doesn't sound like the Armed Forces,
but
I know.
They police themselves, in my experience, incredibly well. It's always really good-humoured and to be celebrated. So a little bit of peeing in the street. Come on.
Have you been to an Army Navy game, Tim?
Yeah, years ago. Yeah,
I've never been. I'd like to go.
Yeah, I'd fancy it.
I went when I was playing with Damu. I think he went on to play for England Sevens, but he was playing for the Army when I was at Newbury.
Nice. Yeah. They've got one at Kingsholm as well. I think they play a few fixtures there.
But but you see lovely stories like that there was a soldier. I think he does it every year, but he went into a bar in Twickenham, bought 9 pints.
Yeah.
Drunk one himself and then left a picture and a bit of information about 8 of his comrades who died in Afghanistan and left other people to drink the pint in their honour.
Yes, it's quite heavy stuff actually when you through the
it is.
Through the Twitter feed.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah. But and just on a couple of other newsy bits, wanted to rattle through those. Sokopi Kepu's the latest signing announced for London Irish.
Yeah. So
the prop,
33-year-old Australian prop, yeah, signed.
Who went to Bordeaux and didn't do anything? That guy.
Also, the guy who is a very, very handy, both scrummager and carrier with ball in hand.
I'm pretty certain that his last stint in European rugby was less than stellar.
Does it feel a bit like an Owen Franks for London Irish? Oh, I never know whether I've got the right one. Is he the good one?
Owen Franks is the good one.
Yeah.
Or the bad one.
Ben Franks you're talking about. Franks.
Does it feel a bit Ben Franks where they're going to spend a load of money and not get a lot of return?
So I think this is a much different sign-in.
Really?
I'm a big Kepu fan.
I'm not. Not even slightly. I thought he had a really good World Cup.
4 years ago.
Yeah, 4 years ago. So four years ago when him and who was the other boy, they were working with Mario Ledesma and everyone was like, yep, it's great. Australian scrimmaging is back. And it was largely built around him. Went over to France, didn't do particularly well. In fact, didn't do well at all. Went back home again. And now I guess he's going to be eating up a large chunk of London Irish's salary cap. I don't think it's a good move. I think I'd be spending my money elsewhere. And I think, I'm very suspicious of most of London Irish's business so far. I think they are spending their money ill-advised.
I think this is a good sign-in. Because cornerstone of your team, I think he's still got a few good years left in him. He's got a few miles under the belt.
He's got a 33-year-old prop.
Yeah.
Well, okay, yeah.
Yeah, he's a prop. Okay. He's not a 33-year-old winger.
Yeah, that could work.
Yeah. They're going to announce many more. Adam Coleman will get announced. Waisaki Naholo will get announced. Paddy Jackson will get announced. They're signing loads. They're in the Premiership. A quick mention for Ealing Trailfinders beating London Irish in the Championship Cup.
Already done it, mate.
Final.
Already done it.
Oh, well, good.
Leicester
Tigers have... Leicester Tigers have confirmed their Thomas Labanini signing from the Jaguares. Also, talk about big props, 153 kgs, I think he is. Nefi Liatigaga, or Liatiganga, I don't know how the pronunciation is.
Love for
there you go. And, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, he's a big old boy.
Have you... just someone tweeted us saying to add to the middle-class rugby at Harlequins... They were at the Quins game and noticed an advert in the toilets for Hunter Wellies with the caption, "The ultimate rubber protection."
Nice.
And Neil Clifton followed it up and said, surely they don't need them because they can park their cars right outside their Maseratis right outside these days.
Exactly. Yeah.
Quite right.
I just want to revisit that actually, because if you are listening and you own a Maserati, and you want to take us to a game, one of my life goals now is to go to a Quins game in a Maserati. So if you are that man, or woman, of course, and you want to lend or drive me to a Quins game in your Maserati, please get in touch.
That'd be good fun.
Yeah, me.
Yeah,
Phil,
well, that's small fry for me now. I get flown to games in the Quins private jet, so
yeah.
No biggie,
hey? The Diamond
and I bumped into a friend of the pod. The friend of the pod and one of the guys that's been to every single one of our tier two tours, Ed Scott.
Oh,
a fan.
Nice.
I bumped into him at the rec.
Hi, Ed.
He sends his regards. So when you go around these games, it's amazing how many cracking people and faces you meet who we've met before in Madrid or
Bucharest
or wherever.
Yeah,
it's beautiful. Beautiful thing.
I purposely speak louder in hope that someone will recognise me.
You always talk loudly and obnoxiously, though.
What were we talking about? Yeah, we were trying to talk about your boy's Ulster.
We were going to go on to my boy's Ulster with a 22-year-old average age for their back three, which, even if you bring in their best back three player, it probably still wouldn't go up very much with Stock if Stock has returned. But a very young and inexperienced back three that the Carty and Healy did exploit on occasion, but the cover defence was good enough. And ultimately, and I'm always surprised saying this, but ultimately, the pack that won it.
Yeah, they did.
The turnaround in the Ulster pack, both the carrying, but the defensive structure and set piece play has been quite incredible. And the two tries probably fit in to go to two of the best players who have been missed, or their kind of players have been missed for the last few years, in Timoney and Coetzee.
Tell me if I'm being a bit harsh on these two teams, but it struck me as two very skillful but underpowered teams, and then the one with slightly more power beat the team with slightly less power. They look like a mirror image of each other.
It's interesting. They're both pretty well drilled, pretty well set up. And I said last week they were on 62 and 63 points, I think, in the league, so they were evenly matched. Now, power is something you can only judge relatively.
Okay.
So Ulster were marginally more powerful on the day than Connacht. But then Ulster were equally powerful when they played Leinster in the European Champions Cup quarter-final. They matched them up front, and there's very few teams that can actually do that. So I think maybe it's being a little bit harsh on Ulster to say they're underpowered, certainly based on this performance, because you can only judge them based on what they were playing, and they were more powered than what is a very competitive Connacht team.
I thought Marcel Coetzee was very good. I thought he was actually the key man to get you over the game line, and ultimately that was the big difference.
But Henderson obviously is a big, strong boy, but Treadwell, who I've mentioned before this year, he has come on leaps and bounds.
Well,
he's playing really well.
Now, where was he? Like Harlequin's reserves or something?
Basically, yeah. And he's still only a young man. I think he's still only 22 or 23.
It shows, doesn't it? You just need the right opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. And having an Irish mother
helps.
So, yeah, he's doing well. But the props as well. So there's a couple of young lads, Tommy O'Toole and O'Sullivan, who have come in, and they're performing well. So I wouldn't... Let's see how they get on against Glasgow in 2 weeks' time.
But what did you think of the coverage, Phil? Did you watch it? Do you watch it live?
I've watched the highlights. I've seen bits of coverage that you sent through to me.
What did you think of the coverage, Tim? You're the professional around here.
Didn't see it.
Oh, do you not?
I would never criticise someone else doing the same job anyway, because houses and stones in glass houses.
Yeah, well,
very good, Tim.
Maybe we leave it there. It's an interesting decision to base your production around Father Ted, though. I mean, it's have a themed rugby production.
very in keeping with the west of Islanders.
Yeah, making Connacht.
If that is the case, which I'm not making the comment that it was.
Oh God, what have we done? can we edit all this out?
So in 2 weeks' time, Ulster will travel to Glasgow, and Munster will travel to Leinster.
I'm going
to
make one more point about these two. Two semis. Okay, so. Everyone talks about the amazing Munster fans, and I like Munster mostly because Tim hates Munster, right? But
I don't hate Munster. What are you talking about?
Kind of.
Tim definitely doesn't hate Munster.
No, of course he doesn't.
I think there are a very small number of Irish fans of the provinces. Well, Munster. who don't reflect the overall great nature and great manner of the fans in general, who are quite bitter.
And those are the particular fans that I really like, actually. Those actual ones. Anyway, here's my point. My point is, I couldn't believe it, that, like, Munster had a whole stand empty against Benetton.
Did they?
Yeah, and that is like a stadium. It's not like a football stadium, which have co-opted. It's their stadium, and they had a whole stand empty. Now, I don't know if it was being refurbished or what, but they just didn't have the people to fill it. Meanwhile, the Ulster Connacht game was absolutely bouncing.
Packed, yeah.
And it's just an interesting little bit of information for you.
Did Benetton take many travelling fans?
Because it's not that interesting, is it? When Benetton probably had 10 fans there.
Well, I don't know. I mean, you'd assume someone would go.
Tim, I said the pack strength is all relative, and interesting on this podcast is all relative because JB spent 10 minutes before talking about a single refereeing decision in the Sale game.
It's a very interesting decision, though.
So everything's relative.
It's all relative. So Ulster will be playing Glasgow and
Munster travel to Leinster.
So basically, Leinster should walk that, and then
bear in mind it's the week after the Champions Cup final.
It won't matter.
These derby matches never go to script, or they don't always go to script.
Yeah,
we will review those in due course.
It would be staggering.
But by the way, how have you decided that Sale versus Bristol is a higher billing than playoff eliminators and other games with sides that could finish in the top four or top six?
Well, it was an eliminator. Sale got eliminated from the top four after that game.
and it was, to be honest, Tim, I wasn't really concentrating, and after 2 or 3 minutes, I thought it would be rude to try and interrupt JB's flow.
Yeah, that's fair. No, I get that. I understand. Just before we do, did you touch on Folau? Like, what is the latest there?
Yeah, so I have sort of looked at this a lot. From what I read, the Australian Rugby Union have offered him £1 million just to make this situation go away.
Yeah.
And he said no, which is really interesting.
So that is interesting. Now, the offer doesn't appear to be anything unusual.
No.
So rather than get both parties dragged through the mud, and all the legal expenses, and all the rest of it, and all of the evidence come out and be made public.
But what is it? I mean, the evidence is public. It's a social media post.
Yes, but there's a lot of stuff behind the scenes. Like, the previous conversations with Raylene Castle and the ARU were not... People know about them. They don't know the ins and outs of them.
Can I just say, Raylene Castle. What a gloriously Australian name. Raylene.
She's good.
She's a Kiwi.
Good speaker.
Yeah. Oh, is she?
She's a Kiwi.
Wow.
Yeah.
Still, great name.
So, yeah, that is not that unusual. I do think it's interesting. I was astonished that Folau appealed. And I'm astonished that he's turned that down because it seemed like a good offer. But he must either be very badly advised, or he actually knows something.
Yeah.
Well, I think there is a slight bit of context here where I genuinely believe... Well, there's two things. There's one, he wants to play rugby.
He does.
First and foremost, I think he wants to play because he loves playing it. But secondly, he genuinely, again, I just think people have to remember this. He genuinely believes what he's saying, and he genuinely believes this is God's plan, and he genuinely believes that he is following what God wants him to do. And so, £1 million. £2 million, in to a degree, it kind of doesn't matter. I think he is that entrenched.
Well, people are,
in his religious beliefs.
So people are saying all sorts of things, and it's very interesting. This, because on the one hand, people are saying, "Oh, well, he can't be that religious. You know, if he was that religious, he'd just walk away." But instead, he's using highly paid lawyers to, you know, go after the ARU.
I know.
Fine, but on the other hand,
they're saying he's turned down £1 million. Therefore, he's greedy. Isn't that one of the seven deadly sins?
Yeah, but hang on a minute. If we just flip that on its head, I thought the ARU were taking a moral stance. So what on earth are they doing, offering him £1 million? So it does go both ways.
Yeah.
And the bit which I'm going to enjoy the most, comfortably the most, I'm really looking forward to this. If he was to win, there's a lot of people out there who their first line of defence, sort of like a politically, not politically correct, but The way they sort of got around not being able, you know, or not speaking about the subject itself is say, well, he broke his contract and therefore he deserves to go. But if it turns out that actually
he didn't break his contract. Yeah.
Where do these people go then? I mean, there's a, I mean, I say interesting. It's basically like, I just like the schadenfreude.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to everyone losing also their mind.
A couple of things have come to my mind this week, which was Matthew Bastereau got a 2-week ban, I think it was, for using a homophobic slur in a game that was caught on a ref mic.
Yeah.
And so done in an aggressive, forceful, deliberate way at someone. And I think, well, I may have this wrong, so I apologise if my facts are incorrect on this. So I don't want to put a bad mark against someone's name unfairly, but I think Will Skelton did the same.
Oh,
something very similar.
Did he?
Yeah, I know Denny was accused of it.
Denny was accused, but he got off, didn't he?
With Adam Shilcock.
Yeah. Bastereau was definitely... there are definitely differences from Bastereau to this. One, he's never had a warning. So Bastereau's first time he got a, whatever it was, 2-week, 4-week ban, Israel Folau didn't get anything first time. He got a slap on the wrist, and then he got a warning, and then second time is when
It will be interesting to know like how much the ARU tried to keep everything quiet in order to keep Israel Folau, because you know they've just lost their best player. They've lost Super Rugby's all-time top try scorer, and they're not in good shape anyway. How hard were they trying to say, Izzy, please don't post anything? I mean, be as homophobic as you want. Do whatever you want.
Just don't, not on social media.
Please don't. And I think that could be quite damaging. I'm looking forward to seeing how it all pans out, actually.
Well, the interesting thing about how it all pans out is, and again, I'm making no, I'm not saying what I think should or shouldn't happen. My point is, I think what's actually happened here when it comes down to it is, as you say, JB, you've sort of pointed out that the ARU have made out that this is a moral point, and then they're offering money on something which they say is a moral point, where actually this is all financial. It all comes back to sponsors. It all comes back to defending financial positions. And the problem I have with that as a concept is it's wide open for abuse. You get a massive Twitter mob piling onto someone, and you just watch where it goes. It's that, what do they call it? The something window.
Overton window.
Where the Overton window, where it will shift.
Yeah.
And it will keep moving, and it will keep moving. And if you leave it where it's based on money, it's based on a mob mentality on Twitter and things like that, it will shift, and there will be other things. And the next time someone like Matthew Bastereau, as he did, gets caught on a ref mic saying one thing, there will be a pile-on, because people know they can have an effect, they can get people sacked. It's happened in other industries, and it will happen in rugby. So I would have liked the ARU to be consistently on a moral basis, and the fact you pointed that out is exactly where my head was. It's like, why are they offering money if this is not about money?
Someone made the claim that they offered the money to save on legal expenses. So I did a quick calculation. They could afford three of the top paid barristers in London, three of them for 300 and something hours each to work on this case. So it's definitely not legal fees that they're saving on.
That's not an enormous amount when you consider the reputational damage. I don't think the £1 million offering I don't think it necessarily contradicts the moral position.
Yeah, I say £1 million, it's not £1 million, it's £1 million Australian dollars. Which is about half the amount. It's substantial.
It's a substantial stuff, but it is also the reputational damage and just the unnecessary. But also the unnecessary distraction 6 months out from a World Cup.
Yeah, but, like, reputational damage. I mean, what? It's already out there.
Exactly as I said before.
And what the offer was, Phil, was it for him to... The money was for him to effectively terminate his own contract.
Is that why it's been badged? Well, that's fine.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's effectively what they're doing, because that's what this hearing is, as to see whether the termination of his contract is lawful. And they're saying, you agreed to terminate your own contract, so we don't have to dissolve it. We'll give you $1 million.
Yeah, which is fine, because it just makes everything go away.
Yeah.
So what they want to do is make it go away.
They would love it.
Well, if it was cut and dried, and they are within their rights, and it's just as you say, everyone very quickly on Twitter and everything pivoted instantly to it's just a contract. It's a contract.
Yeah,
it's a contract.
That's the bit which I'm interested in.
Well, no, and I think that bit is interesting.
Very interesting.
And it wouldn't be the first time this year that a governing body has lost a wrongful dismissal case.
Why? What was the other one?
Guy Noves was paid €1 million.
Was he really?
One month ago, his wrongful dismissal by the
someone in France,
the French,
is slightly more difficult than almost anywhere else in the world.
Yeah, true.
So yes,
yeah.
Right. Well, that's our weekly legal roundup. Unless you want to round it up some more.
Well, I'm sure we're going to hear what the outcome of that is. It gets underway again tomorrow as we record this, doesn't it?
Wonderful.
Correct. Yeah.
Maybe now with the time.
Who would have thought it would be going into a third day on a simple contract termination point?
Yeah, this
bigger than the Mueller inquiry.
If anything, I kind of knew this would not be simple.
And it's also going to appeal. Apparently, no matter which way this goes, it'll be going to appeal, according to experts.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me as well.
Mm. Just very briefly, but on the same line, I think it's worth saying that Alex Lowe and Owen Slott from The Times did a great bit of work on the RFU Council, getting all that detail
amazing.
About the... It was a brilliant bit of journalism.
Yeah, it was a fantastic read. I mean, hang on. Because I've got some very, very strong thoughts on this. But first, you're going to have to go and buy yourself a razor. Why? Because, it funds everything. It makes it keeps the lights on in the rugby dungeon.
Pays for our rugby trips.
Yeah.
Like the RFU Council's rugby trips.
For every packet of razors that you subscribe to, buys me, Phil and Sim and Negroni. Think about that. Think about that. But not only that, they are excellent razors. Tim knows the spiel about how much you get and all the rest of it, and they're relatively cheap. So go on to Cornerstone. Was it cornerstone.co.uk? /eggchasers. That is our landing page. Sign up there.
Correct.
And go treat yourself to some great razors. And, help us.
Four quid for six amazing razors and your free engraved weighty aluminium shaft that stands up on your shelf with your initials engraved onto it, £4. As you say, cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers.
I would. Right.
I would.
One day we'll explain that joke. Right, okay. RFU Council. Yeah, so great by Owen Slott and Alex Lowe. What did you think?
My first reaction was disappointed.
Really?
So briefly, the story, if anyone missed it, it was a great little get for the Times, but it was the 55 RFU councillors in a review of cuts to the organisation were asked to vote on their own expenses being cut. I think there are various different cut levels, but they're as much as 40% down to a lot of them about the sort of 15 to 20% level. The RFU Council, when it came to cutting their own expenses, their trips on Six Nations away, staying in nice hotels, having food, dinners, flights, and everything, they would at the very most cut the equivalent of 6% of their jollies.
So
yeah, so my first reaction was disappointed. My second reaction was, well, if they are supposed to be influencing and running the RFU, they need to be involved and they need to be travelling. So maybe it's not as bad as it seems. Like, No one would expect Tim, if Tim was working at the Bath Wasps game, no one would expect him to not travel, to have to pay for his own ticket to get into the ground. But
agreed. But what about my wife coming as well? And yes. What about me spending three nights at the posh hotel in Bath before a game?
Yeah, some of these hotels, my mouth is drooling.
Yeah, that's where it does get a bit ridiculous that... Even you could have a 50% reduction in the extravagance and the length of these things. It would save thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands over a season, and it wouldn't significantly, or doesn't appear to significantly, affect their ability to do their role. So I am a bit disappointed.
It's a really tricky one, right? Because A club basically is run by its old boys. And these are just the old boys of England. I mean, it gets a bit messy because, of course, it's the national team and this, that and the other. And I think we've sort of elevated the RFU to... They shouldn't just be putting out an England team, but they should be, you know, running all of our coaching sessions and providing us with tackle bags and painting the pitches and, you know, doing whatever, and doing whatever. But fundamentally, it is just a rugby team. And rugby, you know, rugby clubs have committees. And the whole point of becoming an old boy is to join something like the RFU Council. I mean, when I read that, I thought, one day I will be an old boy worthy of that sort of, you know, that sort of treatment. The other thing as well is, these cuts are very...
Hold on. No one's saying... When things were plentiful and the cut runneth over and every budget was being, you know, raised every year, then yeah. I think everyone's... No one's saying no one had a problem with it. But it's in the context. It's in context. It's when you're cutting every other budget by X, Y, Z, and you refuse to cut your own. It's like communist Russia. It's like Animal Farm, George Orwell.
Yeah, some are more equal than others, right? I get that.
And also, it is during a period of significant upheaval. All the cuts are coming in because the RFU has been losing money because it's been mismanaged and. It's in not as strong a financial position as it should be, being the world's biggest richest union.
Yeah, so one of the things that made me think, actually, and it isn't directly linked, but we are getting, all rugby clubs are getting rather reliant on, you know, RFU handouts. And I thought, like, well, surely we should be focusing more on, you know, should our clubs be sustainable without the RFU sending out, like, centralised grants? You know, I just thought, maybe we should be looking a little bit closer to home. You know, if you can't afford your rugby pitch or, you know, you want to build a new clubhouse or some such thing, maybe you should look at raising the money yourself rather than waiting for the RFU to, you know, hand over some cash. The problem they've got...
I can just to counter that very, very briefly. So some of the costs, for example, are the cost of travelling large distances in some cases, depending on the league. Yeah. But that's as a direct result of the structure that the RFU have. So that's fine. So cutting that sort of thing, actually, the RFU could be cleverer and make things more sustainable by regionalising it up into a higher level, for example. There's all sorts of inventive ways you can do that.
Like referees, I mean, you know, they need to be trained. I mean, there are some really, really bad cuts. The problem the RFU have got, from an optics point of view, is this is the RFU Council. They are in charge of running... Well, it's not running the game, is it? It's an overseeing body. And if they'd have just said... Yeah, the RFU Council, it is the ultimate all-boys club. It's great fun. We're going to go away for three nights. I think I'd give them a pass. But the fact is, they try and... It's a hypocrisy of this sanctimonious position that we are going to be the overseers of all things rugby and make sure it's run supremely well. That's where they run into problems. They should just have modelled the thing as an all-boys club and that'll be it.
I don't know. you might have given them a pass. I think a lot of other people wouldn't have. Oh, you're just going on a jolly, you're not trying to sort stuff out.
Yeah, exactly, because, I mean, that's what a rugby club is. It's just a bunch of men and women doing jollies. That's what all the old boys do when they're going on Tock H or Broughton Park, or, you know, and everyone loves it. It's just on a huge scale because it's England.
Yeah, I'm not sure that would have washed with most people.
Good.
No.
Good.
No, and I think it's worth pointing out to anyone listening, if you've got a local rugby club...
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
And this is something you're interested in. You can find out who your councillor is because the 55 people on the council represent each of the constituent
bodies
of the counties, effectively. around England.
Right.
So they're voted in, and they can be voted out. So presumably, I don't know this, but
wait,
I would guess
what?
That the reason this story got to the newspapers is because some of the people who had a more reasonable position on this, that we should have cuts that are in line with the rest of the organisation, probably were a bit cheesed off with the guys who were refusing to.
Tim. This has been educational. I had no idea about any of that. So, there's a member per region. Is that correct?
Or per county or something. I'm not exactly sure how it works. I think it's done by county.
Okay, you'll probably get the drift of where I'm going with this. And I can get voted onto this thing. I mean, we've got a role.
Theoretically, yes.
How does one plot a path to get onto the RFU council? And could we use our platform to get me on that council? Because I tell you what, I could enjoy those various Negronis as much as anyone. But I mean, we could all go for a region, couldn't we?
Sure, why not?
Why don't we set up an actual, like a proper political campaign?
Now you've mentioned that as well, I think these cuts are 6% is ridiculous. It's way too deep.
Yeah, it's far too deep.
It should have been a 15% rise.
Yeah, because, you know, we've got to go out there.
Agreed. Agreed. Shotgun, Greater Manchester. You can have Cheshire, JB.
I'll take Cheshire. Phil, you
can have Lancashire, Phil.
Okay, yeah, perfect.
How hard can it be? I mean, all we need to do is get the votes. I mean, I did this with second team captaincy. I just got my mates into the room to vote for me and got second team captaincy. So it's got to be roughly a similar sort of principle.
Yeah.
I want to be on the council. Right, there we go. File that one away for one of our projects. JB 2020. how long's the term?
For life. Once you're on.
A life appointment. like a Supreme Justice.
Yeah.
Oh, amazing stuff. Shall we talk about some more rugby? Anyone for more rugby?
Yes, I think we should. I think we should.
Any other games you want to particularly cover?
So I would like Tim to tell me a little bit about Bath Wasps, because you're at that one. I always like to hear the games.
Fantastic game of rugby. I did have so I'll let you in on a little bit. So I interviewed Todd Blackadder before the game. Okay. I didn't think I was going to have another Todd Blackadder moment, but I was called up late because Craig Doyle was ill.
Yes.
So that meant I got another little moment with Todd Blackadder. So when I finished the pre-game chat with him, I just said, Todd, look, before you go, if you win, I probably won't get to chat to you afterwards. And I'm not gonna let you in on the conversation, but basically, I let Todd know how I felt.
Wow.
Todd know how I felt.
Did you see Toby Booth's tweet?
No.
Yes, I did. That was kind of bittersweet, wasn't it?
Yeah.
He was. He's clearly very proud of his time at Bath, but hurting.
Well, the reason it was very Toby Booth, that's what I would say, in terms of he's quite a deep thinker. And you could read that as one or two ways when you could look at it quite bitter. But I think it's just an honest tweet. I think it's just like, honestly, how he felt.
Yeah.
And, you know, going to evaluate.
Yeah, I think you're right.
But
as for the game, absolutely cracking game. Two teams that, and I thought that some nerves might have got in here because it was make or break for the two teams. If Bath lost, then that they were very likely to miss out on top six.
Yeah.
And if Wasps lost, they miss out on their shot at top four and potentially a staring down the barrel for a top six spot in Champions Cup rugby. So it was make or break, but they both really gave it a crack and played some brilliant rugby. I was absolutely devastated at the decision to disallow Josh Bassett's try, which was a try.
That did look like a try for all the world.
Yeah.
It was a try. It was an unbelievable try as well.
It was definitely a try.
So
I'm still staggered at that decision. And I know, Tim, when you interviewed Dai Young afterwards, he was staggered and not particularly happy about the disallowing of that try.
Todd Blackadder said it was a try as well.
Yeah. Because Lover Balavu, so there's all the motion stuff, and there was a line on the pitch, but Lover Balavu ended up 3 yards in front of where the ball was caught by Bassett. So even if the ball marginally travelled forward, the hands went backwards.
Yeah.
It was momentum that carried it maybe millimetres, maybe a few inches forward. So that was disappointing. But Wasps scored a couple of other cracking tries.
These two teams, right, can do none of the basics in rugby, like zero. Like rucking is rubbish. You know, basic scrimmaging is pretty poor. You know, a lot of what they do is terrible. But then the complex stuff they find easy. Like so, like that lovable obby pass was unreal. Unreal.
What, the one after his step and break?
His step for that first try. Oh.
Yeah, step and then power through. Was it Tom Ellis he powered through?
Oh, and by the way, he's available to sign. Yeah. Should anyone want him?
Lovable.
I know.
Yeah, he's gone at the end of the season. I thought he was absolutely brilliant. Have you ever been done by one of those passes?
What, the...
Like the...
over the back of the shoulder type.
No, they're sort of like... They're going to dummy wide, they lock wide, but they pop short.
Sorry. You're talking about
the no-look pass where he looked like he was passing it back to Rob Miller and just popped it up to Nathan Hughes. Yeah. Oh, that was gorgeous.
We used to have a guy at Broughton Park who could do that perfectly, and it'd get me every time.
Oh. Hello? Tim?
Hello?
Sorry, I activated my Bixby by accident there. yeah, and he used to get me every time with it. It's one of the most frustrating things. But it's just when executed as well as that, it's a thing of wonder.
Yeah.
Also, I love Zach Mercer. At one point, when Bath were making their comeback, he caught the ball above his head, faked a pass through the legs like a Fijian kind of.
Yeah.
I've never seen a dummy pass with someone pretending to do the pass back between their legs and then ran forward. He was awesome. It was something like 30 carries he did in that match.
Yeah, he seems to be always on the ball.
Yeah.
His volume of carrying is almost as impressive as his carrying.
And he's really... He's 21 now.
Bloody hell. 20,
22 in the summer. He is one of those players who... He does seem to be filling out a bit more.
Yeah.
But
he might have lost a little bit of pace.
I wouldn't have said so.
I'm not so sure about that. What I will say is that...
I
know what you're saying. He's still athletic, but the way he talks is the most impressive thing about him. He's a Bath captain, like maybe next year. No, I'm not even joking. Maybe next year he could be Bath captain.
I thought you were referring to his thick Yorkshire accent, Tim. Because obviously, he's been. I knew he was born in Yorkshire, but he's got New Zealand heritage.
I thought he would speak like a New Zealander. Does he not?
He's old man. No, when Tim, you had the pleasure of interviewing him on the pitch after the game, he was Yorkshire.
I did Phil Ladd.
Wow.
totally Yorkshire.
I think it's because of the way he plays as well, I expect him to have a Kiwi accent.
Yeah, exactly.
It just would fit.
Yeah.
Oh, excellent.
He's so impressive the way he carries himself and talks. He's got captain all over him. He's going to be a very young captain of Bath. And, he's another potential future England captain.
They say the same thing about Charlie Yules. I mean, I think Charlie Yules, he has captained the team once or twice.
He was captain at the weekend.
Definitely more than once or twice. I mean,
they absolutely love him there. They think he is proper captaincy material.
Well, he was the under-20s captain, wasn't he?
Yes.
The year before Marrow.
So I think there is something to that, what you say to him about how they carry themselves, because there's a load of good young players in the Premiership. Like, you know, they're everywhere. But the ones that are right at the top of the game, like the guys in and around the England camp, I'll give... my experience with Ted Hill, for example. I think to be right at the top, you can't just be a great player. You've got to be a really switched-on person too. Very rarely can you get to the top just through pure talent.
Talent is not enough.
Yeah.
Talent is definitely categorically not enough.
You have to have all the talent plus all the other things as well. And that's basically how you end up in England.
Depends what you mean by those other things. Because I think... kind of speaking well and eloquently is not necessarily one of them.
Well, it's, for instance, but
you've got to have the top 2 inches, and you've got to have the drive and the hard work.
Yeah, but just about how you prepare yourself, what your priorities in life are.
All that, absolutely right. But just as an example, Owen Farrell, who is Captain England, he's not a particular. Well, he's certainly not an outgoing, open speaker.
No, he's not.
He's very. You see him in interviews. He's very close. He comes across as quite introverted, but he is. He's got all of the other things in terms of like the drive, the way he prepares, the mental preparation, the physical preparation. He's got every other box you'd want to tick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. What did you think of that last minute by Bath? I thought it was incredibly impressive.
Well, it was great. Well, 19 unanswered points in three tries in 7 minutes. But I love the fact they went for it went for the bonus point.
Yeah, yeah.
The commentators, I think, is Austin in the box. Like, what are you doing? And they backed themselves. They, did the job. It was great to see.
Yeah, that was very impressive. But it's the flip side of it is Wasps, who were 17-10 up at one point and should have been 24-10 up, to lose it with 6 minutes to go. They were in the lead.
Mm.
To lose from that position is very frustrating for Wasps. And it's interesting because I think you referenced this, Tim, on BT Sport, but Bath have lost plenty of those games this season where it's gone down to the wire.
And last year.
And last year, yeah. So it's quite nice for them to kind of have the tables turned for once.
Yeah, Bath are on my shortlist to make top four next year. I know that's not a massive shout.
Yeah. Is your shortlist 12 teams long?
It is. It is, yeah.
I'll tell you who's on my shortlist on the strength of Nathan Hughes' performance, Bristol.
Yeah.
Because there are very, very few players who can do what he can do. And you had Dave Atwood in the engine room as well. You've got some big men added to what Bristol have already got.
They are high-quality players and in a high-quality coaching environment too. I might have mentioned before that I don't think Wasps are particularly well-coached. Imagine what a really good coaching unit could get out of Nathan Hughes, putting him in the right situations. Scary.
Yeah.
Well, I think that Wasps' game plan has always been set around Nathan Hughes the last few years. And actually, I think it's mainly Nathan Hughes's mental approach. I think someone, whether it's Dai Young, Eddie Jones, or a combination of both, clearly gave him a kick up the backside a few weeks ago, and he's been excellent recently.
Eddie Jones was at the game, was he not?
Steve Borthwick was.
Which game did Eddie go to then? He was at a game this week.
I have no idea.
He tends to get to at least one.
But yeah.
Sorry, go on, Tim.
But have you got your head around where this leaves the Premiership table going into round 22?
Yeah, basically, it's a straight shootout between Northampton, Northampton and Quins as to who can get fourth. Technically.
Yes, correct.
Technically, Bath could do it as well.
Saints go to Exeter. One point ahead of Quins who go to Wasps.
Sorry, Bath can't get top four. It's just Quins and Northampton.
Yeah.
Yes, because of the number of wins.
Correct, yeah.
Is it not because points different first?
No, wins first.
Ooh, there you go.
And Bath can't win two games with one game left. I've run the numbers a couple of times.
Okay.
And they can't.
There's always to be wrong on air, that's all.
It looks largely like if Quins get a bonus point, then they'll get at least a Champions Cup spot. They have to better Saints by two league points to get the top four spot. And then it's all down to sixth and seventh, because seventh place will go to... Well, there will be a seventh spot available there will be a seventh spot available because of the the final Champions Cup.
Got you. So, yeah, the battle for sixth is...
If Saracens win, isn't it?
Yeah, the battle for sixth is pretty savage. I think the more interesting one for me is the permutations for the top four, because it's strongly my view that if Gloucester and Northampton go to the top four, those are two of the most dangerous playoff teams I think I've seen in a long, long time.
More dangerous than when Saracens finished fourth and won the thing?
No, not that dangerous. No, not that dangerous.
That was pretty dangerous.
But that was the year Bath got to the final, right?
Yeah, 2015,
I
want to say.
That's a long time ago now.
Yeah, it's a few years ago. But also, Wasps finished top of the table a few years ago, didn't they? 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah, so I mean, I always think of like Exeter and Saracens, well, they're always going to be there, sort of thing.
That terribly coached team finished top of the table, yeah.
Hey, with zero basics as well, I think you remember JB saying. Zero rookie or line-outs or anything.
They've lost Danny, and look where they are now. It's all about Danny. And look where Danny is. I mean, if I was Gloucester, I would seriously consider trying to throw this game against Sale so I can finish fourth, because I think they're
10 points clear of fourth place.
I know.
I've run the numbers on that as well.
Yes, go on.
You can't lose 10 points in one game.
They should really field it.
Is that right? Egg Chase is exclusive. Egg Chase is exclusive.
You cannot lose 10 league points in one single game.
What if they fielded Tyson Keats or something?
Well, actually, maybe they could. They would have to, field ineligible players and pay them lots of money to breach their salary cap.
Yeah, yes. Get me Tyson on the phone. because if they end up fourth and play Exeter, and I do not think Gloucester fear Exeter one bit. I think they've got their number all day long. That said, it bodes well for them. If they can get like a lucky break against Saracens going into the final, I'd actually have Gloucester slight favourites.
Going against Saracens?
JB, the more likely that you don't even have to worry about that potential because Saracens can finish top again.
Oh.
Oh, yeah, of course.
I never thought of that.
Of course. Because Saracens, a second string Saracens team hammered a second string Exeter team 38-7.
Oh, Christ. So, yeah.
Making the difference in the league table 4 points. So if Exeter pick up 0 points and Saracens get at least 4 points or 5 points to 1 point, then Saracens' superior points difference and equal win. Well, no, we'll have a superior win record.
Yeah.
So they'll finish top.
Yeah. That's interesting. Because I hadn't thought that. Because a few weeks ago, it was pretty much set in stone that Exeter would be finishing top.
Yeah.
Yeah, so here's the other thing, right? If that does happen, Saracens meet Northampton, wherever they're going to meet them, right? Whether it be final or the semi. The fact that Northampton have been absolutely battered by Saracens so many times.
Like,
humiliated, embarrassed, ridiculed.
Yeah.
It strikes me as that Northampton could beat Saracens because that's that's just how the world works, Phil.
No.
When you've been that embarrassed that many times.
I'm not having it.
Well, that's exactly why it should happen. When it's so much of a foregone conclusion, that's when it's dangerous.
But we've got to wait 2 weeks before we know the full permutations and the final round.
Why? What happens in the interim?
There's a couple of little games next weekend.
I'm listening.
There is a very small tournament called the Champions Cup.
Wow.
The Heineken Champions Cup. And that is taking place next Saturday.
Awesome. So is it the same sort of format, Friday night kickoff, then Saturday kickoff?
I think it is, isn't it? Let me just check that.
Everything right there,
yeah,
Phil?
Friday, 7:45, and Saturday, 5 o'clock.
No, I really don't care about the Friday night kickoff. Two French teams. I mean, it'll be exciting. If I'm in front of a TV, I will watch it. But yeah, in fact, it's two French teams, and the rest of it sort of takes away a little
bit. Are we doing a preview special, or are we?
I think we should do a ECC MWP.
Okay. Okay. Fine. Do you want to just give a quick reason on this now, or just leave it?
Leave it.
There you go.
We'll do it in a bit more depth, and it will drop into your feed right when you're least expecting it on Wednesday morning.
Yes.
Yes. Slide into your feed. direct feed.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. Right. Well, that's it. Then we're all finished. We're all done.
Any other business,
Tim?
Just that the Cotswolds are unbelievably posh. There you go. That's one.
Yep.
That's why you hang out there.
Drove past.
It's a lot of BT Sport money.
driving back.
Who lives better, members of BT Sports or the RFU Council? it's basically a coin flip, isn't it?
So I crashed with a mate
who lives in just inside the Cotswolds, near a little village somewhere near Stroud, and he took me for a bike ride. He does this always off road biking, so he took me for a ride and lent me his spare bike, and we drove through Princess Anne's back garden, effectively.
Oh.
Which
how is Princess?
It's all right.
By the way, it's a boy. Now that doesn't sound too important until you realise. That boy is probably going to grow up to be a patron of one of the unions, because Harry is.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's a genuine rugby birth.
So are you looking for connections for the council membership?
Yes,
gig?
exactly. I mean, I guess, because is Harry...
Smart.
Is Harry with the Welsh Rugby Union?
I don't know.
Is he not the patron?
He might be.
Because William is the patron of England. So I assume George at some point is going to be patron of England. And I assume that whatever this one's called will be
patron
of England.
Is it not the other way around because he's a Prince of Wales?
No,
it's the other way around because he's a Prince of Wales. I think Harry...
No, weirdly,
sure?
It's not. Yeah, I'm sure. Hang on.
Definitely not 100% confident.
William is definitely the patron of the RFU. I've just been on their website looking at how to become the...
Yeah, okay, cool. But HR, I don't think Harry is. No, you always see Harry in an England shirt.
Yeah, that's what I think.
Yeah, organisational structure, HRH, Prince Harry of Wales, Henry of Wales. Prince Henry? Who's Prince Henry? Is that Harry? Does Harry go... Is Henry going by Harry?
I have...
I think he does.
William! Hang on. No.
Huh?
Who the hell's Prince Henry? Hang on, this needs to be investigated further.
No, Prince Harry.
Is this Henry right there? Or a few website?
Yeah, Henry Charles Albert... Henry Charles Albert David Windsor is Harry. So he's called Henry, but he goes by Harry.
There you go.
Feel deceived!
Yeah, I do as well.
This is more of a plot twist than anything in Game of Thrones.
Isn't it just...
And by the way, I'm disappointed how many, having watched Game of Thrones, I'm disappointed how many royal children are legitimate these days.
Exactly.
Well, are they, Tim?
That's a great question,
Do we need a Jeremy Kyle-style DNA test?
Yes. Hold on. So Prince Harry. Yes, he's not called Harry at all.
Yeah, Prince Henry.
That's an absolute outrage.
So this new lad that we've got on the block.
Yeah.
Oh, hang on, that wouldn't work, would it? Because it'd be... Because, like, his branch of the tree just disappears now. It's all about William's branch. If William has another boy, they will effectively be the next...
Yeah.
So, you know, this one's useless. This one's pointless.
Unless there's some kind of devastating accident.
Yes. Yes, right. So let's stop that until we might get arrested or investigated. Okay, you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, all those things. If you want to get involved with JB2020, please do. Hashtag JB2020 on Twitter. Get me on the council. And until next Wednesday...
Someone, please, someone who's good at Photoshop, please, let's set out a Photoshop challenge for a campaign poster.
Let's do it. I'm going to put these posts up in every Northwest club that I visit. Let's do it. What was I going to say? Yeah, Facebook, we're on YouTube. Don't go on Facebook, we're never really there. Twitter, and on Wednesday you'll be having our EPC, MWDP type thing. So there you go. So from me, Phil and Tim, let the boys play.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. and they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.